Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. On Friday, August the 2nd, coming up, you can hear from Kent's Bionic Lord. Plus, we've got details of everything going on in the county this weekend. But first today, a young man found dead in a Kent park following a suspected scooter accident has been described today as kind and incredibly talented. Well, Lucy's got more for the podcast.
Well, police and paramedics had been called to Moat Park in Maidstone just before 5:30 last Saturday morning. As you say, Anatoly Cherevko is thought to have been involved in a scooter crash and was pronounced dead at the scene. The 24-year-old was born in Ukraine and moved to England in September 2021.
And friends have been paying tribute, Lucy.
Yes, they've told us Anatoly was incredibly talented, and despite having a difficult childhood, they say he was always positive and strong in spirit. They've recalled how at school he showed a talent for being on the stage and was also very artistic. In fact, he wanted to become an artist and was athletic.
And do we know what he'd been doing since arriving in Kent?
Yes, he'd been working at the Waitrose Distribution Centre in Aylesford, and before that he packed apples for a company called Bardsley. He'd been saving money to help his brother and sister join him in the UK. A fundraiser has been set up so his body can be returned to Ukraine. More than £5,000 has already been donated. Money will also go to his family.
Such sad news. Lucy, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories, and if you follow Kent Online or socials, or head to the Maidstone pages of the website today, you can see pictures of a man police are hunting after teenage girls were approached in the town. Two 16-year-olds in Watman Park were asked to take explicit images of a man. Two other girls were targeted in St Peter Street. It's been confirmed more than 140 jobs have been lost after the sudden closure of Folkestone Sports Centre. We told you in the podcast earlier in the week that the charity running the facility had announced it could no longer afford to remain operational. Well, thousands of people have signed a petition calling for the facility to be reopened. Now, the podcast has been told what it'll mean for patients in Kent after GPs voted to take collective action for the first time in 60 years. It's all in a row about new contracts that means family doctors could limit the number of patients they see each day to 25. Now, the British Medical Association claims those new GP contracts will leave surgeries struggling to stay financially viable. Dr. Caroline Rickard represents GPs across the county. She's been speaking to Bartholomew Hall.
In Kent and Medway, we know that practices are under extreme pressure. We have had years of underfunding, and we have the lowest number of GPs in the country. We are well below the national average, which it's acknowledged is too low. So just for us to meet that national average in Kent and Medway, we would need around 260 extra full-time equivalent GPs to start working tomorrow. So some of the other media outlets have picked up on the 25 patients a day. And this has been a BMA policy for some time that practices could have implemented at any time. The 25 patients per day is based on safe working guidance. And the reason that practices might be considering reducing that appointment contact number for their GPs is to increase patient safety. As patients' needs become more complex, we are seeing greater numbers of patients with more complex needs, and we want to be able to spend more time with those patients and make sure that we're working safely. The ultimate goal is that we increase funding to practices, which would mean they could employ more GPs. So if you had two GPs seeing 25 patients a day, rather than one GP seeing 30 to 40 patients a day, overall, you will eventually have more appointments.
The family of a Chatham teenager left brain damaged after jumping into the sea have released incredible videos showing his recovery. 15-year-old Jack Dolan was injured while performing a flip from Stonegate Pier in Margate in June. Now, a scan initially showed no brain activity, but he's been filmed moving his arms and legs and looking around a room. You can see that footage by heading to the website. There's a warning not to leave shiny objects objects near windows after sunlight hitting a mirror started a fire at a house in Rochester. We've got pictures at Kent Online, actually. They show the extent of the damage to the property on St Margaret's Bank. Two crews were sent to tackle the flames at the time. They also managed to rescue a pet cat. One of Canterbury's most prolific LGBT advocates has died at the age of 55. Tributes have been flooding in for Tyrone Alexander, who passed peacefully in his sleep last Friday. His partner of 7 years has told us Tyrone was loved by so many. As well as appearing on the show Blind Date back in the day, he was well known for setting up one of Canterbury's first gay venues, Bar 11.
Kent Online reports.
Next today, and former Kent MP Craig McKinley has been telling us about his readjustment to life after his arms and legs were amputated. He's been given prosthetics after a battle with sepsis late last year, which almost took his life. And he now wants to be known as the Bionic Lord after being granted a peerage. Well, Craig has been speaking to local Democracy reporter Simon Finlay on the Kent Politics podcast.
You now wear these artificial arms and legs. I mean, how did you find that transition?
It's certainly not easy, I can tell you. I mean, I'm on sort of Mark II legs at the moment. They sort of start you through various ones. First ones are very, very bulky, and they don't have an ankle that moves, which makes going up and down stairs and up and down slopes very, very tricky. But as you go through the journey, you get better and better ones. I'm now on ones that have got an ankle that moves a bit. It's sort of a hydraulic ankle. And yeah, the walking isn't too bad. It's not comfortable, but I regularly do over 6,000 steps a day, which even for someone able-bodied is probably, you know, up there with what most people do on a daily basis. So the legs aren't really an issue. And you see people with artificial legs and you wouldn't even know that they've got them. I must say, if I have long trousers on rather than shorts, I mean, shorts are far more comfortable, obviously, in this weather. You wouldn't particularly know that I've got artificial legs. My gait is pretty good. You might think I've got a sort of stone in my shoe. That's about all, really. But the arms and hands are very different. I mean, they're good as far as they go, and you can pick things up. Pick glasses up. You can do a few things, but they're not as good as the real thing, as it were. Not as good as your original hands and arms and fingers. Nowhere like. But they're better than what the NHS are currently giving me, which is frankly a bit of a sort of rubber hook, which I'm not entirely sure what you're meant to do with two of those, and hence that's going to be part of my campaign. It's rather silly that the NHS will give you the multi-articulating sort of clever bionic arms in time, but you might wait 3 years for them, and you think, well, why make people wait for 3 years for something you will provide anyway, when they can get on with a bit more of a normal life, and not an issue for me, mental health issues, I'm always cheerful, but for some, 3 years with two rubber hooks, I don't think is going to take you to a very good place, because you can do very little for yourself with those. So it's not just getting people back feeling better, looking normal or as normal as you can, but it's perhaps getting them back to work and doing something productive. And that I think is important. I would have thought that is part of what the NHS is trying to achieve and is there for.
Are you going to use your new position as a lawyer to push for that, and what effectively?
Yeah, very much.
What effectively can you do?
Well, it's like many things. What can MPs, backbench MPs, do? Well, not a lot. What can lords do? Well, not a lot. But they do have a voice, and you've got Hansard, and the media does follow what's happening in the House, and you get the opportunity to go on programmes like yours and others, where there's an interest in a story like mine, because it is somewhat unusual. I suppose it's made that much more unusual that I'm going to become a peer of the realm. So yes, it's an opportunity to have a voice. And obviously the new health secretary, I've got his phone number. I'll no doubt be sitting down with him and, explaining to him the experience that I've had, and with a hope that he'll say, yeah, that's really not quite right. Let's see if we can do something better. So if what I've gone through can actually make people coming down the track who are yet to be afflicted with sepsis and yet to have what I've had, and there's not many a year, there's only about half a dozen, because most people tend to die, or they certainly did years ago, but with medical advances, you've got a better chance of survival. If I can get one of those people in the future getting better prosthetics earlier, then I'll see that as a job well done. There's also a job of work to do in recognising sepsis. Sepsis is one of the biggest killers in the UK. I mean, granted, some of them are like the sort of thing that you die of when you're end of life. If it wasn't sepsis that killed you, it'd probably be chest infection or something. Many of those are what you might call end of life infections that you could probably do little about. But there will be many, many thousands of younger people who will die of sepsis every year. And in my case, I don't think much could be done because it came on so unbelievably quickly. But the usual route is that you get a few days grace where you're feeling increasingly unwell. If we can, during that period, have family, friends go, do you know what, I'm more aware of sepsis and I'm concerned that is what you might have. You might be able to get to people earlier, get them into the health system that does know what to do with sepsis.
A bit like meningitis, where, you know, the awareness of meningitis, especially in children, is so much greater than it was.
Absolutely. And also, if you think of the stroke campaign, the fast campaign, I mean, that's now entrenched within us. So I think perhaps if I can be part of making people think more about sepsis and saving a few people from getting to the stage that I'm in, or even worse, towards death, then that will, again, be a job well done. You know, perhaps there are other things going on here. I mean, my mother passed away with an autoimmune disease. It was rheumatoid arthritis. Shouldn't really kill you, but in some people, if it's very serious, it does. Does that mean that I had an autoimmune deficiency within my genetics? Is there a genetic test, of which we hear of so many more now for all different types of ailments and illnesses, that perhaps would have recognised, you are likely to be more susceptible to an autoimmune disease like sepsis, because that's what it is. It's your body going completely berserk at the response to an infection. So perhaps you would be able to have a more of a risk list of people. Mm. And then further than that, you think what we managed to achieve with COVID, with rapid testing, and we had test kits at home, and what we have with glucose tests for those who are diabetic in a very easy prick finger tests. Is there perhaps some type of easy test that we could have that would be recognising markers of likely sepsis? And I know lactate levels are one of the measures, and I had that test, and that was what confirmed it at Medway Hospital. Mm. You know, are there these sort of easier tests that people would be able to go, right, let's do a finger prick test. You're on the pathway here to sepsis. So, yeah, perhaps what I've gone through will be a force for good amongst the health service and across the country to actually save a few lives in the future. And that will make my life very well worth living.
Craig goes on to chat about the election and the defeat for the Conservatives. He also says who he thinks could be the next leader of the Tory party. You can hear that episode in full at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Kent Politics Podcast.
Kent Online reports.
A headteacher's paid tribute following the death of a 10-year-old boy from Broadstairs following a seizure. Lewis Dauncey-Jones was a pupil at St Peter in Thanet Juniors and had been waiting for an MRI scan following a history of similar attacks. His classmates have made a booklet of happy memories while a fundraiser's been set up for his family. There are calls for a ban on barbecues on some of Kent's beaches. It's amid concerns people can be injured by stepping on them if they're still hot or buried under the sand. Now, a local councillor has put forward the suggestion. A ban on disposable barbecues is already in place in Whitstable and Herne Bay. I'd like to know what you think. You can comment on the story or you can get in touch via our socials. Meantime, there are calls to tidy up Canterbury after residents described part of the city as shabby and neglected. Members of the South Canterbury Association claim litter is on the rise, which encourages antisocial behaviour. The City Council's told us the issue is a priority and always welcomes litter reports so they can be resolved swiftly. Bosses at a food bank in North Kent say they're relieved to be staying open after finding a new site. Swanley and District Food Bank was given notice to leave its Linden Way home by the end of November. After months of searching for a new venue, it's relaunching today in the High Street. Meantime, a mum from Faversham has designed a map to help families struggling with food poverty over the summer holidays. Erin Byrne is a student at the Margate School and was set a task as part of her art course. She says she wanted to focus on something that impacts her local community, and I've been chatting to her all about it.
As part of my course, we've been asked to create a design intervention. So a lot of the thinking at the Margate School is about how to use design to address social and environmental problems. So as I live in Faversham, I was really keen to look at something that particularly affects Faversham. And there's a lot of child poverty in Faversham. And also I was kind of aware, because I've got my own daughter who's 6 years old, who goes to school in Faversham, that actually free school dinners is not available, obviously, in the summer holidays, and it's a really long stretch. So I was really keen to do a project about helping families access free food in the summer holidays. So I came up with this idea of creating a map. Basically, it's quite a simple idea. And so that meant collaborating with all the community groups and faith organisations in Faversham and getting all the information into one place, because actually that's the thing that's missing. Often families have to do quite a lot of research themselves. So it was just about trying to make that information as accessible as possible, basically, and visually beautiful. So I tried to make the map something that's engaging.
Yeah, I was going to say the map is great, and it's really good for young people as well, particularly little smaller children. There's like activities for them to get involved in. Because it's your hometown, how much has that kind of added to the project and made you really passionate about it?
I mean, I think my partner, my husband, Chris, thought I was obsessed, actually. I think the fact that it was local to me and the fact that I was able to meet so many local organisations and people who were also very passionate about the project, I think made me feel even more and more excited about it, because I think I had the idea originally and I thought, oh, I wasn't sure if it was a good idea. But then the more people I spoke to in Faversham, the more I was, you know, the feedback was so positive, and everyone seemed to have a connection to the subject, because with the cost of living crisis, actually, you know, the poverty line is actually affecting more and more people. And also everyone's having a tough time, especially over the summer holidays, you know, trying to keep kids active and out of the house and providing food for them is really difficult for anyone. So it just felt like something that lots and lots of people were interested in getting involved in. So I think that made it even more exciting, because I think it started off as a project just for me, but then it became much more about all these kind of relationships that I built and, meeting lots of new people around a really important problem, basically.
Yeah, and would you say that Faversham is doing quite well in supporting people now that you've had a chance to go out and see what organisations are providing free meals or where the food banks are? Do you think Faversham's doing a pretty good job in helping as much as it can?
I think that's a really interesting question, because when I first had the idea, I didn't know anything really about the subject. And I had the preconception, I think a lot of people have, that Faversham is quite affluent and is doing fine and it's a market town. And actually, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth, because, you know, there are a lot of people who are actually struggling, and it's a kind of an invisible issue in Faversham, food poverty. So I think I approached the town council, because I said, oh, is anyone doing anything about this? And they suggested I went to the Faversham Community Network group meeting. So that's something I had never heard of, but basically it's a group of 17 organizations who all come together every month, and they kind of target key issues that are facing the town. So their two big items are food poverty and social isolation, as well as other issues. So I turned up at their meeting, and they were a bit sort of surprised to see a kind of student designer, It was amazing, really, to hear about everything that was going on. So I went from having a blank piece of paper and slightly panicking that I was going to have a map with nothing on it, which would be a very sad story as well for the children and families of Faversham, and actually having all this information. And it went from being, I thought it was going to be an easy graphic design project, and it turned into kind of a directory. I mean, I've got it in front of me here, and you know, it was just going to be a map, and now it's like absolutely covered in information. So I think, yes, the answer is yes. I think it's absolutely amazing. Like, the two things that I learned through doing it, which I think was really interesting, is that, because I originally was targeting primary school age kids, but there was all this information about teenagers, and actually there's great support for teenagers in Faversham because you've got two youth clubs. And the West Faversham Community Centre actually provide, if you're a young person in Faversham, you can have a free meal every night of the year, apart from Christmas. I couldn't believe that. I thought, wow, if I'd known that, it's incredible, the offer that's there for young people. And then for children, you know, you've got the Umbrella Centre are offering free packed lunches from Tuesday to Friday. So, you know, that's really amazing offer that a lot of people don't know about. And there's, you know, another one called Make Lunch, which is at the Alexander Centre. And that's not just providing free food, which is on Mondays and Tuesdays for 3 weeks out of the summer holidays. They also provide crafts, activities, and it's all free, you know, and it really, it's very open. It's very inclusive. And I was absolutely amazed. Yeah. So that's a very long answer to your question. But I think the answer is yes. I was really impressed at what's going on in Faversham, and it just has inspired me as a member of the public to really want to be part of it and to work out, you know, to volunteer or to somehow offer my services in some way.
It's a fantastic project. Thank you so much to Erin for being on the podcast. Now, the map has details of where parents can get help, as you heard, including actually Faversham Food Bank. Now, they're going to be getting donations from the Tons of Tins campaign, which is currently running over on our sister radio station, KMFM. If you head to KMFM's website, you'll find details of how you can donate. We've got one more week left before we start delivering those donations across the county. And now for a roundup of everything going on in Kent this weekend, here's Sam Laurie.
It's shaping up to be a scorcher this weekend, and I don't know about you, but I'm very much looking forward to soaking up the nice weather. If you want to make sure your weekend doesn't go to waste, we've got some brilliant ideas to get you out of the house over the next couple of days. From today until Sunday, the Margate Soul Festival returns to Kent's popular seaside town. The event is one of the biggest and longest running soul festivals in the country and boasts more than 100 live performances. There will be live music on the beach and at some of Margate's indoor venues, as well as late night DJ sets, a record fair, a sunset bike ride, street food stalls and a beach clean. If you're a petrol head, there are a couple of great car shows that you won't want to miss over the weekend. First up, it's Camperfest, which has a new name and a brand new location. The three-day car show, previously known as the Kent VW Fest, has a new home at Birchington's Quex Park and is celebrating all sorts of campervans this year. There's also a fun fair, food and drink stalls, and an on-site camping ground if you feel like staying overnight. It starts today and runs until Sunday. And then, on Saturday and Sunday, the Supercar Weekend returns to Hever Castle, showing off some seriously impressive motors. High-performance vehicles like Ferraris and Lamborghinis will be pulling up on the lawns of the castle, and amongst these fancy cars, you might spot a very familiar-looking yellow three-wheeled van that's a bit more like an old banger than a racing car. Now, something for the whole family is the Pirates Weekend at Dover Castle. On Saturday and Sunday, you can meet some of history's most infamous pirates and hear swashbuckling stories from the high seas. There will also be interactive shows and hands-on activities. And, going back a few decades, the Kent 50s Festival will return to Sandwich for a third year, bringing with it rock and roll music, swing dancing and retro fashion. There will be free outdoor performances and ticketed concerts inside the Guildhall on Saturday. Finally, it's time to celebrate the LGBTQ+ community with Tunbridge Pride. There will be a colourful parade and live entertainment from musicians, singers and drag artists at Tunbridge Castle on Saturday, so don't forget to bring your rainbow flags. Now drink lots of water, use plenty of sun cream and have a fabulous weekend.
Kent Online Sport.
Tennis first up, and Kent's Emma Raducanu goes for a place in the semi-finals of the Washington Open tonight. She's taking on Spain's Paula Badosa in the last eight. The 21-year-old from Orpington chose not to represent Team GB at the Olympics to protect her fitness ahead of the US Open. Now we have got some Kent athletes in action at the Games in Paris. Do make sure you're checking the sports pages of Kent Online for the very latest on how they've got on. Moving on to football, and Gillingham are back in friendly action this weekend. They're travelling to take on Woking in their final warm-up game before the start of the new season. The Gills get their League Two campaign underway against Carlisle at Priestfield on August the 10th, not long now. And in cricket, Kent take on Middlesex in the One Day Cup on Sunday. It's two wins out of three for the Spitfires so far in the competition. Play at Beckenham is due to get underway at 11. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.